This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Wednesday edition, on Monday, Israel's power grid was the target of what Minister of Infrastructure Yovel Steinitz described as the largest cyber attack the nation has experienced. The attack failed, but Steinitz said the attack should be a warning to other nations. How secure is America's power grid? Arizona Congressman Trent Franks, a member of the House Armed Services Committee, is here with the answer in just a moment. Also, I am in Iowa for tomorrow night's GOP presidential primary debate. But one candidate, the Donald, says he won't be here because Fox's Megyn Kelly is unfair to him. How will his absence impact the debate, and will it impact the outcome of Monday's caucuses? CNS News Editor-in-Chief Terry Jeffrey is here for that discussion. And sexually transmitted diseases are on the rise across the nation, causing government officials to scramble for solutions. But is it that difficult? FRC's Irina Grosu joins me for that conversation. The website, TonyPerkins.com, you can find out more about today's topics, our guests. You can also sign up for phone number a little bit later when we go to the phones. Jot this down if you're a new listener, 866-372-7234. All right, earlier this week, Israel was, they actually had a cold spell. The temperatures were below freezing, which is pretty chilly for over there. Well, during that cold snap on Monday, the country underwent what the Minister of Infrastructure called the largest sign. Fear not. If you've read the Bible, you've read those words. But have you ever paused to meditate upon their meaning? In almost every case where God spoke those words, it preceded something extraordinary being done through ordinary people. God told people like Abraham, Gideon, and the apostles to reject their fears because fear holds us back from experiencing all that God wants to do in us and through us. We can't operate in fear and in faith. Faith says advance, fear says retreat. Do you want to know how to live with no fear? That's the focus of my new book, No Fear, Real Stories of a Courageous New Generation Standing for Truth. You'll be inspired and hopefully challenged by the real-life stories of young people who are standing up for Jesus in an increasingly hostile culture. You'll also read the biblical accounts of those who stood for God in their day and learn how to stand in a way that honors Christ. Learn to live with a holy reverence for God, and you'll have no fear of man. For more information, go to TonyPerkins.com.
From songs like Shake It Off to Whip Nene to the lifestyles of the Kardashian family, it's hard to say what's on the minds of millennials in America. It's something that companies and researchers have been trying to figure out for years, and for good reason. The millennial generation now makes up over a quarter of America's population. More importantly, what do millennials believe? The answer to this question is a vital clue into the direction our culture will take in the years ahead. In a new publication from the Family Research Council, the beliefs of millennials are explored at length, with analysis of data from numerous surveys about their views on marriage and family, religion, and values. As the data reveals, millennials are drifting away from natural family values. As a whole, they are largely indifferent toward religion, are apathetic to the ideal of intact married families, and believe that homosexuality should be accepted by society. Even so, the strong sense of justice that most millennials possess provides a glimmer of hope. For more on how to speak truth to the millennial heart, visit frc.org/millennials. John Adams once said, "Facts are stubborn things." And finding hard facts and data on subjects like marriage and religion can be difficult today. But the Marriage and Religion Research Institute has the solution. Maripedia is an online social science encyclopedia on all matters related to family, marriage, religion, and sexuality. The purpose of Maripedia is to let the data do the talking. By delivering the power of robust social science findings to families, churches, and schools, we intend to change the debate. Maripedia is an important resource for any student, parent, policymaker, reporter, or blogger who wants to become a proactive player in improving society. Visit maripedia.org for the stubborn facts on this faith-affirming research. That's maripedia.org. That's maripedia.org.
Well, folks, welcome back. We're talking about cyber attacks, and that's the first time that's happened. We actually got knocked off there for a few moments. I don't know where I lost you, but let me start back as I introduce our first guest. Earlier this week, Israel had a cold snap, and during that time, on Monday, the country underwent what the Minister of Infrastructure called the largest cyber attack that we have experienced. Now, the virus was identified and neutralized, but he said it should be a warning to other countries to prepare. And the question is, how prepared is the U.S.? Joining me now with the answer is a member of the House Armed Services Committee, a strong supporter of Israel, our good friend, Congressman Trent Franks, who represents the 8th Congressional District of Arizona. Trent, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. You know it's always good to be with you, sir.
Well, I appreciate that. It's always good to hear your voice. I want to first ask you about this latest cyber attack on Israel. Is there anything more behind this? Was this random? Is Israel being targeted? What do we know?
Well, I don't think almost anything is ever random when Israel is concerned. The truth is that the three most malevolent forces for cybersecurity in the world are Russia, China, and Iran. And it seems more than a coincidence that Israel would be hit like this. The good news is that in terms of defensive capability, the two great powers in the world are America and Israel. We have the most ability to be able to fend off and defeat cyber attacks. But the problem is that, you know, you're always able to come up with new cyber code, and until way to actually see that code is afforded, and it's very difficult to build a defense that recognizes that particular code as a malicious code. It's kind of ironic here, Tony. I don't want to speak out of turn, but you know there are two ways to attack a grid without some sort of kinetic force, and that is EMP and cyber. The former Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman General Dempsey said that these are kissing cousins, because they both affect the same networks. And I took a team of scientists to Israel here some 3 or 4 years ago, and we did an analysis of the Israeli grid. It's an incredible coincidence here. Now, we were doing it for their vulnerability to electromagnetic pulse. Israel recognized that vulnerability, and now they have, over those years, come up with a plan and are now hardening their grid against electromagnetic pulse. They will probably be the first nation on the planet to actually be, at least for all practical purposes, impervious to EMP at some point. And I think that they can help lead the whole world in the right direction. But this is very serious. I believe that there are probably embedded code in a lot of our grid facilities and some of our scatter controls even now. And it is serious. Fortunately, we're kind of on the ball here. But this is a whole different environment, and if you take down the electric grid, you affect the other 16 major infrastructures below that. It affects them all, so it's a very key issue.
So we're increasingly dependent upon the energy grid, the power grid, and if that goes down, everything else is impacted by that.
Well, that's true. And, you know, ironically, we were able to find the military doctrine of Iran here just a couple of years ago, not even 2 years ago, and we were able to translate it over to Defense University. This is not classified, of course. This is something that's open source data. It probably ought to be classified. But the reality is that they have identified in their military doctrine, when they're trying to have a military confrontation with larger countries or more capable countries, that they're asymmetric approach will be to go for the grid, because it affects so many things. And they mentioned electromagnetic pulse as the best way to do that 22 times in that Iranian doctrine. It's also significant that that the EMP Commission said that if we had a major worst-case scenario, and I want to emphasize that, because I don't want to ever sound like a fearmonger. I want to say, though, that we have to look at this significantly and open-mindedly. The fact is that if we completely lose our grid, it is a catastrophic impact to us. The EMP Commission said we could lose 70% or more of our population. It's that significant.
Now let's talk, Congressman Franks, let's talk about the EMP threat, because that's something that you have focused very heavily on, which you just pointed out is one of two ways in which a power grid can be taken down. You feel the threat is very significant.
Well, I feel the threat is a low probability, very high impact. And it is something that, in my judgment, over the years, if you look at history, our enemies have always tried to find a way to exploit our greatest weakness. And some people call the EMP threat against America sort of the kill shot against our country, because it's the ultimate cyber attack. You know, the cyber attack can take down certain SCADA controls. It can take down even significant grid facilities. Can even cause some issues that could damage hardware. But the truth is that most of the time it's going to be isolated to a particular sector of the country. With EMP, you can take out the entire computer capability, a control mechanism, and you can do severe damage to the hardware. And literally, in a worst-case scenario, and you notice I said that for the third time, worst-case scenario, it could take out virtually our entire grid. If that happens, the scenario is unthinkable, and we cannot and must not be vulnerable to it.
So the question then is, Congressman, what are we doing to harden our system, to protect our system, much like you were talking about Israel is taking those aggressive actions to protect their power grid? What are we doing?
Well, there's two significant things I would say there. Number one, there are efforts ongoing now that we're hardening certain critical parts of our grid now, that especially those that are essential to national security. We're starting to do that now. It's not talked a lot about, but it's far and woefully short of doing what's necessary. Fortunately, the second thing is I've had legislation in the Congress now for the past several years, and this year, both the SHIELD Act as an amendment into the energy bill and the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act, which is a standalone bill, both of those have now passed the House of Representatives and are awaiting action in the Senate. And I think that there's enough bipartisanship here that we might actually get some legislation that would comprehensively start to harden our grid in America. And it's absolutely past time to do that. And I'm hopeful, but it must happen.
Well, maybe this recent incident there this week in Israel will help speed that process along. Congressman Trent Frank, thanks so much for joining us on this Wednesday afternoon.
Thank you, Tony. Have a great day, sir.
All right, you do the same. Congressman Trent Frank of Arizona. Find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. All right, when we come back on this Wednesday afternoon, yes, I know what day it is, we'll be joined by Terry Jeffrey. He is the editor-in-chief of CNS News, a great news source, one that I use a lot. He's going to join us to talk about tomorrow night's presidential primary debate with GOP candidates. One of them is going to be missing. What does that mean? Well, Terry's going to tell us. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Earlier this year, you may have seen the headlines about a state agency in Oregon ruling that bakers Aaron and Melissa Klein should be fined $135,000 for refusing to use their creative talents to make a cake for a same-sex wedding. One has to wonder, what does it take to engage the church to stand up against the tide of today's eroding culture? On January 16th, join us for the Free to Believe simulcast conference. Family Research Council's Watchmen on the Wall ministry is partnering with like-minded leaders who know what it means to be salt and light in this generation. This will be an inspiring, practical conference that will give churches the tools they need to impact the culture in their communities and beyond. You will hear from David and Jason Benham, Dr. Ronnie Floyd, and many more speakers. For more information on hosting this simulcast conference at your church, visit freetobelieve.com/conference. That's freetobelieve.com/conference.
What do faith and good planning have in common? They can both have consequences beyond our earthly life. By faith, we can have the blessed assurance of life after death. And by careful planning, we can extend financial support of the American Family Association even after we've gone on to be with the Lord. One way to make that happen is a bequest of life insurance, and it's easier than you think. In fact, it's as easy as naming AFA as beneficiary of all or a portion of your policy on your beneficiary designation form. Doing that would mean your life insurance proceeds will help further the work of the American Family Association, and that your estate will benefit from an estate tax charitable deduction for the value of the proceeds paid. To learn more about making a bequest of life insurance or a whole range of other financial planning and giving options, contact the AFA Foundation. Reach us through Facebook at our website, afafoundation.net, or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. You've heard the conversations. Nah, I don't pay any attention to politics. They're just that, politics. They're all the same. To them, such matters regarding abortion and marriage, security, military, borders, our societal response to terrorism, questions regarding the freedom of speech and religion just don't matter much. There's very little thought about the possibility that some of these politicians are good schmoozers. There's little thought to the possibility that there just might be one of those candidates worthy of their support. This is particularly scary if this scenario describes millions upon millions of United States citizens. Sadly, I submit that this is not only probable, but the reality. May this not be true of you or me. This is a Decency Minute. Find us at AmericanDecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
From songs like Shake It Off to Whip Nene to the lifestyles of the Kardashian family, what is the millennial generation thinking? The answer to this question is a vital clue into the direction our culture will take in the years ahead. As the data reveals, millennials are indifferent toward religion and believe that homosexuality should be accepted by society. Even so, the strong sense of justice that most millennials possess provides a glimmer of hope. For more on how to speak to the millennial heart, visit frc.org/millennials.
Before we get into this next segment, I need to provide a disclaimer as a result of my personal endorsement of Ted Cruz last night on The Kelly File, which, by the way, you can see at my Facebook page. If you want to check it out, you can go to my Facebook page, Tony Perkins. All right, here's the disclaimer. Neither FRC, the Family Research Council, the various radio networks that carry this program, nor the Washington Watch program itself supports or opposes candidates for public office. And my personal endorsement should not be interpreted by anyone as an endorsement by those organizations or entities. Okay, having said that, the final Fox GOP presidential debate prior to the Iowa caucuses is tomorrow night. This time there could be a huge void. Frontrunner Donald Trump. Trump has been feuding off and on with Fox News since last August when he said Megyn Kelly, who was one of the moderators, was unfair to him. Now, what impact will his absence have on the debate, and will it have an impact on Monday's caucuses? Let's ask my next guest that question, CNS News Editor-in-Chief Terry Jeffrey. Terry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, thanks for having me on.
All right, Terry, what impact does the Donald's absence have on tomorrow night's debate?
Well, I think it's unfortunate, particularly for this reason, Tony. What should happen in a presidential campaign, particularly in the interaction between the press and a candidate, is that the candidate is willing to subject himself to very specific and pointed questions, both about his positions on public policy and on his record, and allow people to ask him follow-up questions so the public gets a very clear idea of where that person stands. And I think with Trump in particular, even though he's never served in public office, so we've never seen how he actually votes when it matters on a subject, or how he would sign a bill or not sign a bill were he a governor. That's particularly important. I also think it's particularly important for Trump to subject himself to tough questioning from the media because he has changed his positions on some very profound issues. And quite frankly, I don't think he has explained exactly why he has changed his positions on some issues. Have his values changed? Has his perspective changed? Or has the political impact of his position changed? So I think it's particularly unfortunate, just not just for voters in Iowa, but for voters all around the country who deserve to make an informed judgment when they cast their votes in the presidential primary process And I think that Trump has a duty to give them an opportunity to hear his answers on questions.
Well, Terry, let me ask you this. In the absence of him being there and answering those questions, does that not tell American voters something, though? I mean, if things are a little tough, he doesn't like questions, in particular the question that Megyn Kelly asked there in Cleveland, and I happened to be there in the audience that night, was about the things that he had said about women. And was those comments inappropriate to be saying about women? And if you can't face those questions by reporters and you kind of run from that, what does that say about how you would conduct yourself as president?
I think it raises very serious questions. And I think there are, voters have questions about all the candidates. But clearly, like with Trump, given that he has not served in public office and his positions have changed, I think the questions are heightened with him. And I do think, quite frankly, Tony, I think the debates in themselves do not go as deeply into the issues as I would like to see them go.
That's true.
The worst debates are when they're asking ad hominem questions or not asking about the issue. But I know from my experience in journalism that when you ask a politician a question, you expect them not to give a straight answer. So you have to be ready to ask a follow-up question. And in a political debate, if someone is a good opponent, they're going to make sure that that follow-up question is going to be asked, and they're going to engage on the issues, and hopefully there's enough time so people can see from the very pointed and sequential questions in the way the person answers them, whether the person is sincere, whether they've thought the issue through, whether they have a well-informed and intelligent position on the issues. And I think so far in this campaign, Donald Trump hasn't been in that kind of venue before the national eye.
I think that's a really good point in general about the debates, that they ask a lot of these superficial, sometimes what you describe as gotcha questions, and you do not get into the substantive discussion about issues and policy, which I think is critical. But that said, that seems to be the trend, and I thought there was a good observation by Charles Krauthammer that when he said yesterday when he was analyzing Donald Trump that, you know, this guy, you know, it's reality TV. It's constantly changing things, keeping things moving. And it made a lot of sense that, Donald Trump has put a lot of drama into this year's cycle.
Well, he has, and you know, at least on the national polling level, I think that in his positioning on the issues has explained a lot of his appeal. But as we talked about before, Iowa is different. I do believe that people in Iowa pay very close attention. There's not a huge turnout for the caucuses. I mean, in the last three caucuses on the Republican side, you're talking about 120,000, 130,000 people turning out. Now, on the Democratic side, in 2008, when both nominations were wide open and the White House was wide open, they had about twice that many turnout on the Democratic side. They did not on the Republican side. So I think there is a question that we're going to find out on Monday whether or not that sort of national appeal translates into people actually getting out on a Monday night and going to an event that lasts more than a little while. And another thing, Tony, is that in Iowa, or if you're going to vote in the Republican caucus, you've got to be a Republican. But if you're a Democrat or an independent, you can show up at the caucus and change your registration. But you need to really motivate people to get them out and do that. So we're going to see on Monday, who's actually motivated voters to do that kind of thing?
It's going to be very interesting, and we'll see what impact his absence tomorrow night has on that. Terry Jeffrey, thanks so much for joining us. As always, fascinating to talk to you about the political landscape.
Thank you, Tim.
All right, folks, again, CNS News, a great source of information. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and you can follow the links over. All right, when we come back, going to be talking about sexually transmitted diseases have been on the rise in cities across the country, but one city in particular is leading the nation. We're going to talk about it and what they're proposing as solutions. Are they on track? We're going to talk about that with Arena Grosu, who is the director of the Center for Human Dignity here at the Family Research Council. Don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch right after these messages.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Apparently, global investors are concerned about the rise in popularity of Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders. As a matter of fact, they're a little bewildered, confused, and dazed over the fact that these two guys could be moving up in the polls. What they're concerned about is they believe that their policies from an economic perspective are going to create a trade war, certainly between the two largest economies in the world, China and America. Some are saying this trade war could make the 1930s look like the golden era of trade. That's not good. They say it will lock up, or they're concerned that it's going to lock up so much of the country's demands. Well, look, I can't disagree with the attitude that global investors have over this. And I can't disagree with the premise that these two guys know absolutely nothing about global trade, global economies, and global governance. Nothing. And I think either one of them are certainly very scary from an economic perspective, that we could have major problems with China, Korea, Venezuela, and so many other countries that they think we need to cut a better deal with, or in Bernie Sanders' case, just forget about altogether. Interesting perspective, but it's got the global economies and global investors a little bit more concerned. Just one more thing that they need to be concerned about.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T. Perkins. All right, for some time now, sexually transmitted diseases have been on the rise in cities across the country. At the top of the list is Los Angeles County, which leads the nation with the highest rates of chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis. Now, according to Los Angeles Times, some public health experts have blamed the heavy use of online dating apps, arguing that they lead to more casual sex among people 25 and younger, who are the most likely to be infected and also the least inclined to seek testing. Now, their solution is they're hoping technology will help reduce the spread of STDs, but is more technology really the answer? Are we missing the obvious? Joining me now with her analysis is the director of FRC Center for Human Dignity, Irina Grosu. Irina, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
All right, let's talk about Los Angeles in particular, looking for technology to help them fight what is the highest STD rate in the nation. Is technology the answer?
Technology is not the answer in this case. The answer is to take it a step back and teach children and young adults to avoid sexual risk altogether instead of trying to fix the problem after promoting sexual activity. We actually have, FRC has put out an issue brief on the risks of sexual activity, and that includes out-of-wedlock pregnancy, of course, STDs, psychological effects, lower academic achievement, and we have this available online. We need to teach our kids that they should avoid sexual risk altogether. We do that with drugs in school. We don't say you should reduce your drug intake. We say reduce, completely avoid doing any kind of drugs.
Same thing with cigarettes. I've always made the point, we tell kids not to smoke. We don't hand out filters and say, here, put this filter on that cigarette that you're going to smoke. We tell them, don't do it. It's not good for you. There's not only the issues of STDs, obviously unplanned pregnancy, but there are emotional aspects of this that can lead to depression and other negative effects for young people who engage in sexual behavior outside of marriage.
Of course, because sex was meant for marriage, and a lot of hormones are released, oxytocin and other hormones that bond people who are casually engaging in sex. And this leads to a lot of heartache. It leads to depression, as you mentioned, and other issues, besides the fact that it's a public health risk in just in terms of the STDs. And it's this public health risk is costing us major money. In fact, they said, I looked up the CDC numbers for this, and the CDC reported that for young people ages 15 to 24, the issue of STDs among the 20 million new STD infections among that young group costs the government $16 billion in healthcare costs a year.
So how significant is this spread of STDs? I mean, we'll put this in perspective. I mean, what other healthcare crisis are we faced with that's at this same level?
I don't even know of another healthcare crisis at this level. The CDC rated that for Americans ages 15 to 24, they make up a quarter of the country, but they are responsible for 50% of all the new STDs in the U.S. And so it is a huge number, especially for young people. And yet this is the group that is targeted by Planned Parenthood and all of these other groups that go into schools to encourage kids to participate in sexual activity instead of teaching them not to.
And then here we have, like in Los Angeles County, where government officials are saying, look, we just need to make testing procedures easier. We need to do online testing. When in fact the message simply needs to be that sexual behavior needs to be reserved in monogamous relationships between men and women who are married. It's just fascinating to me how we're like a dog chasing its tail, going around where we've created a problem and then we're trying to create some solution for the very problem that we created.
That's completely right. And most of these STDs don't show up right away. So the fact that they're saying the technology will pick it up, well, if it picks it up, it's after the fact, and it's long after the fact when these young people are still sleeping around and still infecting other people. And so really we need to look at this as a public health risk, and we need to focus on putting more money into sexual risk avoidance education. Because that is really what's going to get to the root of this problem.
Yeah, Irina, one final question, because I think some people just think, oh, well, you just get some antibiotics or something, you can clear this up. Some of these STDs have long-term and even life-threatening consequences.
Exactly. So undiagnosed STDs cause 24,000 women a year to become infertile. In addition to that, they are higher risk of ectopic pregnancy and a lot of other issues. So this is something that is a risk to our nation. It's a risk to our children especially, and it needs to be taken up at the core, at the root of where the problem is.
All right. Irina, as always, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Sure thing, Tony.
All right, Irina Grosu, she is the director of the Center for Human Dignity here at the Family Research Council. All right, when we come back, we're going to be going to the phone lines, 866-372-7234. So don't go away. We're coming back. I hope you will as well. Right here on this Wednesday afternoon, you're listening to Washington Watch. Don't go away.
The hallowed grounds of the Arlington National Cemetery. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We will visit the Arlington National Cemetery. We'll see the burial site of John F. Kennedy, the Arlington House, which is the home of Robert E. Lee, and also the changing of the guard at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. That's just one stop on one day. So much to see in our nation's capital on our spiritual heritage tour in June, and then the other one in September. In addition, we'll be going to Mount Vernon. Also, a tour of Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. will precede our trip to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon. For all the information on these tours, just go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com or call for a free brochure, 800-FAMILIES, option 5.
Our country is in trouble. We're in a moral nosedive.
And recovery won't come from a political party. It'll come from returning our focus to God. You can help by being a part of the Decision America Tour.
In 2016, the Decision America Tour will visit all 50 states. At each stop, Franklin Graham will share the life-changing truth of Jesus Christ and challenge Christians to live out biblical principles at home, in public, and at the ballot box.
And I really believe this next election is going to be one of the most critical elections in the history of our country.
Be bold about your faith in Christ. Sign up for your state's prayer team. You can also get friends together to pray for America, our leaders.
And for the Decision America Tour.
If you do, we'll send you a free prayer journal to encourage you in your prayer life. Go to DecisionAmericaTour.com.
The only hope for this country is the Church of Jesus Christ.
DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Daddy, where did all these grasshoppers come from?
God made them. He designed each of these little hoppers.
Where did we come from?
God made us too.
But where did God come from?
Our children ask so many questions. Are you prepared to answer? The American Family Association and Focus on the Family present the 21 Toughest Questions Your Kids Will Ask About Christianity with author and speaker Alex McFarland.
The Word of God talks about passing the faith to the next generation, and that's something we're called to do, and we've got to do it well.
The 21 Toughest Questions Your Kids Will Ask About Christianity is a video curriculum complete with leader's guide and participant's workbook. In 6 30-minute sessions, Dr. McFarland helps us better understand our own faith and how to teach it to our children. This curriculum is available now at afastore.net.
Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon, 866-372-7234. Here's the question I have for you this afternoon. I want to know what you think. I asked Terry Jeffrey about this earlier. Do you think Donald Trump's absence in tomorrow night's debate will impact the debate? You think it's going to have an impact? If so, how? Now, I mentioned Charles Krauthammer. He was on Fox last night talking about this, and he made the point that Donald Trump has kind of used the same strategy as reality TV on this presidential debate. And I thought it was very insightful what he said, because in reality TV, and Donald Trump's been very successful with his reality TV program, and there's got to be new drama. You got to keep things, you know, churning. And that's really what Donald Trump has done. He's made it very lively, and he's engaged a lot of people in the election cycle, which I think is a good thing, bringing more people into the process, getting people focused on this election. That's positive. If it's turned into good, positive energy, that means people voting, people being informed, and helping get the country going in the right way. But think about it. Step back for a moment. Is that what we want in a president? I mean, we really don't, I think, want the White House to become the center of, you know, kind of a reality TV show. Anyway, I just thought Charles had a really good point that he made last night. Don't always agree with him. I probably agree with him more than not, but I thought it was, again, very insightful. All right, what do you think? Do you think Donald Trump's absence tomorrow night at the GOP debate, the last debate before the Iowa caucuses, will it impact the debate? And if so, how? All right, we're going to take our first caller is Iris in Texas. Iris, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony, and I want to say that I literally jumped in up and down last night in my living room, probably woke my husband up when I saw you make that announcement, and I even called your office to say thank you for You're one of the people that I greatly admire in Washington. But I'm thrilled that he is Donald Trump is off, because I think it'll give Ted Cruz a better chance to even be stronger than he has been before. And hopefully that's what I hope will happen, that it will make enough of a couple of points difference to give Ted Cruz the win. And I think it'll also give people like Mike Huckabee and some of the other, Ben Carson, more of a chance to speak, because usually Donald hogs the show. That's my comment.
All right. I appreciate that. Iris, thanks so much. I've heard some say this is going to put the focus onto Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, as they really are kind of intellectual equals. I mean, both of them are very good, and this is going to see more of a contrast between them, with Donald Trump not being at center stage. So it could be that just everybody else has more time, and maybe we have a more substantive debate. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But right now, I want to know what Dan in Pennsylvania thinks. Dan, welcome to Washington Watch. Dan, you there?
Yes, I am, Tony. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What do you think, Dan? Is it going to have an impact?
I don't think it'll have much of an impact at all. I wanted to say two things real quick. I think Trump has demonstrated that he will cooperate with the establishment Republicans, and I think people see that. And I just read a post by Brian Fisher from AFR, who said the actual caucus voters, the ones that will turn out in Iowa, Ted Cruz has a strong lead far beyond Trump. So I don't think it'll have an effect at all. It'll probably give Ted more opportunity. And I expect to hear Ted Cruz say something to the effect of, "You're fired."
All right, Dan, I appreciate the call. The polling, what the polling shows, in fact, there was a Monmouth released a new poll today, and they've got a couple of different projections, and a caucus is different than a primary, right? And so caucuses are harder to gauge, because when they make phone calls and they ask somebody, "Who do you support?" and they say, "I support such and such, I support candidate A or I support candidate B," it's not as easy as just going down and walking through the door and into the voting booth and cast your vote and walk out. A caucus is more engaged. It takes more time. It's if you're new and you don't really know how it works, it can be intimidating. And so they have really kind of two projections here. If they have the higher turnout, because as I mentioned earlier, Donald Trump and kind of all the drama that he's interjected into the presidential primary has attracted more attention. So people are paying more attention. They're more aware of it, and he's picked up a lot of support. Obviously, he's leading in the polls. If they all show up and participate in the caucus process, according to this latest poll, he has about a 7-point lead. Now, if it is if it's along historical lines and you have your traditional caucus goers turnout, then Ted Cruz is leading among them. Again, it all comes down to the turnout and participation. Now, let me just say this. I encourage people to participate. And whether you're in Iowa or Mississippi or Louisiana or Texas or Oklahoma or North Carolina, wherever you live, Pennsylvania, as Americans, we have the right to participate in our government. This is how we choose our leaders. I said we had a right. As Christians, I believe we have a responsibility. It's a part of being salt and light. It's a part of influencing the world around us. So if you are not registered to vote, you need to register. And you need to participate. I'm not going to tell you to vote for. I just want you to be informed and voting. Listen to this program. Make up your mind based upon the things we talk about, where we talk about the candidates stand. We're going to have a voter guide coming out soon on the presidential candidates, just kind of talking about where they stand on the various issues. But be informed and then be engaged. That's how we structure and make our government work in this country. Dan, thanks for listening. Appreciate you calling. Let's go to Arkansas, where Tom is on the line. Tom, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey there. How are you doing? Just want to tell you I really enjoy your show. As far as the turnout from this, I don't think it's going to make a huge difference. There will be people that won't listen because they're disappointed in Trump not participating. I'm a little bit disappointed that he decided to do that. However, I do understand his decision. I thought that Megyn Kelly was very unprofessional in the way she attacked Trump back in August. And if I had been in management at Fox, she would not have been allowed to be a moderator here. And I will say that I support Ted Cruz, and I have supported Ben Carson also. I would vote for any Republican over anything that the Democrats have. And that's really all I had said, Tony.
All right, Tom. Hey, I appreciate you calling. And as always, all opinions are welcomed here. We'll talk about them. I'm when we look at the field of candidates, we actually have a number of good candidates. You mentioned Ben Carson. Ben is a good man. We've got Rick Santorum still in the race. Good man. We have Mike Huckabee. I mean, you're from Arkansas. Mike Huckabee was the governor there. Mike is a good man, good Christian man. We've got so many, and that's actually a good challenge. Now, we've got to kind of work our way through to try to consolidate behind a conservative candidate so that we can kind of beat the establishment and put someone into the general election, having captured the nomination, that can beat a liberal. What's happened in the last two cycles is that we have had moderate candidates on the right, on the Republican side, and the turnout has been, maybe I could say anemic, or it's been less than it should be because people just didn't trust the moderate candidate. And they were good people. I mean, I have a lot of respect for John McCain. I like him. Mitt Romney, I like him as well. But when they have a past that either is not conservative or they have a record that's not consistent with the rhetoric that they're currently using, and people don't buy their explanation, conservatives are not going to show up. Now, I disagree with that, okay? I'm not condoning it. I'm just saying it's a reality. That's why I think it's important that we elect get the nomination for a conservative who can then go into the general election. All right, Tom, thanks so much for listening and calling in. Let's stay in Arkansas, and let's go to Mac. Mac, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, I certainly hope that it does make a difference, and I hope it's a negative difference and everything on behalf of the Donald, because from what I've been hearing on AFR, there's too many of the people that are currently in Congress that say they can work with Trump better than they could Cruz or probably any of the rest of them and everything. I'm thinking they think they can manipulate Trump better than they can the rest of them, and that's not what we need. So I hope the Donald shot himself in the foot on this one. Thanks.
All right, Mac. Appreciate the call. Let me just remind people of one of the big issues in this election is the Supreme Court. The next president will most likely nominate two, maybe three Supreme Court justices. Now, I don't like it. I don't say that it's a good thing. It's just a reality. I hope we can change it. But the reality is the Supreme Court has a huge impact upon this nation. I mean, think about it. Think about this, the whole issue of life that we have been for 43 years trying to correct what the Supreme Court did in Roe v. Wade. We had the march this last Friday, the March for Life in Washington, D.C. 43 years of trying to correct what the court did. Now, we've made progress, but we're still not there. Now, look what the court did in June of this past year on marriage. These major decisions that fundamentally alter our country and our culture are not coming from the people. They're not even coming from Congress. They're coming from the courts. activist judges. So the next president needs to be able to not just appoint strict constructionists to the court. He needs to be able to identify them. Now, remember, we've got a number of, like, Kennedy on the court, Justice Kennedy, nominated by put on the bench by a Republican, Souter by a Republican. And these guys have been liberal activists. You have to have a president who can really ferret out these lawyers and these judges and determine who is truly a conservative, and then be willing to fight through Congress like the left does. Let me ask you this question. Name one Supreme Court justice that was nominated by a Democratic president who was liberal that turned out to be conservative. I think you'd be hard-pressed. There are not any justices that were liberal when they were appointed and turned out to be conservative. But on the other side, the flip side, there's more than we care to list. So you got to have a president that would be willing to go toe-to-toe with Congress, as the Democrats have, as President Obama did, and fight for his nominees. Because the court is really the legacy of many presidents, because it outlives them, the justices that they appoint to the courts. Again, not saying it's the way it should be, but it is the way it is. And if we're going to correct some of the mistakes of the past courts, it's going to require that we have constitutionalists put onto the court. So don't lose that in the midst of all of the discussion in this presidential race. It's extremely important. And you want to get a president that can navigate through that. All right, folks. I got 30 seconds here, and I'm going to go to West Virginia, where Country's on the line. Country, very quickly, 30 seconds. What do you think?
Yes, sir. I believe it is going to have an effect on, you know, the amount of people watching the debate, just because there's already people that have made up their mind for Trump. So it's not really going to benefit them to watch the thing.
All right.
And then,
are you going to be watching?
I'll be at work. I'll be listening to it on the radio.
If you don't watch it, we'll talk about it. But I would encourage you to watch it. I think it's instructive. And who knows? Because of the extra time that they may have in this debate, they may actually get into some more substantive discussions on the issues. So I encourage you to watch if you can. Country, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. Don, sorry, we're not going to get to you in Oregon. Appreciate you calling in today. But folks, we're just about out of time, and I want to thank you for tuning in and being a part of Washington Watch. I got a big announcement coming up about Washington Watch. We'll talk more about that later in the week. Maybe tomorrow I'll talk about it. We're expanding. Yes, Washington Watch is expanding. We'll talk more about that later. Until then, let me leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.